Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and I've said this to you many times. This is my favorite time of the week to be able to sit here, converse with you, have us touch one another, share ideas, learn new things, and for me, it's very exciting. And I have brought along one of my favorite friends, Richard.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
You know he's one of my favorite friends. Oh, my. It's a wonderful world that we live in, isn't it? If you get
may it
our let's hope it does. And if you get our email, you know that we are going to be talking with Heath Ledger tonight. I first came across Heath's work in A Knight's Tale. And I loved that movie so much. And I thought, gee, that had to have been a lot of fun filming that one. Have you seen other work by Heath Ledger, Richard? Or is A Knight's Tale your introduction to him also?
It's the only one of his movies I've seen. I mean, I'm aware of others, but I haven't seen any of the other movies. And actually looking at his body of work today, I'm drawn to hunt at least a couple of them down. Some of them not. Not interested in the dark ones, but there are a couple there.
In my opinion, Heath was a marvelous actor. And especially in A Knight's Tale, a fun movie to watch. So, in case we have some people on the line who are not familiar with how we work, Richard, God bless him, connects with our guest, and he explains to you, the listener, what the energies of this gentleman feels like.
Well, before we go there, I think it's useful to kind of share with people how this came about, how he came into your awareness and what that means, how you experience someone that comes into your awareness as Heath did. You want to kind of share a bit of that?
No.
We'll do it anyway.
I thought you'd like that. Well, Heath, you might say, started talking to me about the fun that this movie was, the one that we watch, A Knight's Tale. And actually, we watch that movie quite frequently. It seems like no matter how many times I watch it, it's like seeing it for the first time. And so as we kept having these conversations, we thought it might be fun to have Heath come on as a guest on one of our Saturday night shows. And here he is. Is that what you had in mind, Richard?
Well, that'll do, but add to it a little bit, if you will, how you experience him when he comes forth into your awareness, what that is like. I think it would help to give people a little insight, you might say, into, well, in a way, the kind of right brain magic skills, but with your particular slant on it. Given, for example, I have no clue when beings are trying to talk to me, they come talk to you first.
That's because you ignore them. It's sort of
good.
What you're asking me is to tell the audience what ice cream tastes like.
In a way.
Yeah. Well, when I become aware of an individual, sometimes I see them, and sometimes I see their aura, or I'll see part of them and their aura, and I usually hear them. But it is one thing that is interesting, Richard. Before any of this happens, I intuitively know who it is for the most part. And that part's interesting, and I can't describe that to people or tell them how to do it. It's just there. I suspect that it probably has to do with many lifetimes of of doing that kind of work.
I suspect
however,
so, but it's really like any intuitive process. I mean, you can't describe it, but you just know that it works. You just know that there is that information that, you know, kind of emerges in that way.
What is interesting is how we can learn to do some of that, and Richard teaches that, and he's such a master at it. So how about you telling the audience a little bit about how you teach this, becoming aware of other consciousness?
Well, essentially what I do is begin with the consciousness of the physical body for a bunch of reasons and open up the communication with that. And most people find quite readily that indeed they are able to readily get answers from that consciousness that they can trust. And it's a surprise to most people because they haven't done it before. But for a range of reasons, it's the easiest place to start. And once you cross that bridge, the others usually come pretty easily. So that's kind of the path that I go down.
Well, give an example.
Of what?
Conversing with the body. What you might say, what you might ask, what answer you might get.
Well, I mean, I tend to do it in a fairly structured way, but, you know, it could be any kind of question that you might ask your physical body. I mean, one of the questions we work with is the amount of water it wants to drink. But you can ask the body questions about the food that you're eating, whether it's happy, whether you need any supplements, whether, you know, there are particular actions it wants you to take. You can review health issues with it. I mean, the list is kind of endless, really.
And, of course, one of the things that you might want to know is things that you're already doing. In other words, you just might be taking some supplements and you want to know from the body if it approves, if it's agreeable with what you are eating or drinking and what the needs might be.
Yes, people don't realize that you can do all of this stuff. And it's interesting because Carolyn and I actually include that in a lot of the work that we do together for various reasons, checking on various things and so on. So let's return to Heath, shall we? Seeing I
Sounds
created
a
sidetrack, I'll take us back.
Yes, take us back.
Did you want to say something?
Yes, I did. What I was going to say is if any of you are familiar with any of his films, it might be a good idea to take a picture of what Heath looked like in your third eye, put it there, and think about him. And when Richard works with him, you can call him into your awareness also. Might be very helpful.
How I experience Heath's energy is very fast-paced, very genuine, very direct, very loving, really. But there is this almost frenetic energy about him. I could imagine he was pretty full-on in life, pretty active on lots of fronts. Lots of vitality is my sense of him. My sense is nobody's fool. You know, it strikes me as being very, there's a lot of wisdom there, a lot of understanding that is implicitly part of the individual. It's very interesting energy. I experience his energy a little left of center in my chest. It's not a you know, kind of overwhelming loving energy, but it is primarily love based. He's, you know, the energy is not a tremendously powerful energy, but it's a clear, direct energy, loving, honest, and very vital is my sense. So that's kind of the sense I get from him.
Interesting. So he sounds like perhaps someone who could relate to people.
I would say so. Yes, very much so.
So, does Keith have a message for us?
You mean Heath? That's the one.
Heath, yes. Excuse me.
Let's see what he has to say. My dear friends, it is an honor to be able to come forth in this manner. And I have to say, it is not something that I have imagined that I would do, either before I crossed over, of course, but indeed even afterward. And I have been aware for some time of Carolyn and, to some extent, Richard's interest in watching A Knight's Tale. And because of the energy that they carry, I was drawn to them and the understanding that I have of the work that they do. And so I, in a sense, found myself watching them and watching them watch my film at the same time. And I was just drawn to this. It was like I was sitting next to Carolyn as she was watching the movie, because I truly did have a great deal of fun making that movie. It was a fun movie to make, and the other actors and the rest of the crew were really great fun to work with. It was a joyful movie. And so I know that Carolyn and Richard both connect with the joy of that movie, and I felt drawn to Carolyn in particular because I am aware of the suffering that she goes through, the difficulty that she is experiencing. And so it was like I came to hold her hand as she watched the movie. And with time, I realized that I could connect more directly with her, and that is exactly what I did. That is when I came into her awareness. And so we began to converse, you might say, in a manner not too different from what I'm doing here with Richard. And so I let the two of them know that I was doing whatever I could to support the unfolding of the work that they do. And so this is how it came to be. And I must say that overall I had a very enjoyable, if a foreshortened lifetime. And I really did love acting and film making. It was my passion and my life. I had many interests in life. I was what one might consider quite bright at school. I was a very able chess player. I had many interests. And I also loved music and worked with composing music as well as acting in films, as you know. And so I enjoyed my life very greatly. There were challenges and conflicts, of course, but overall I was very humbled by the opportunity to live the life that I lived. I regret that I did not have a relationship which lasted longer with the mother of my child, but that seems to be the way that life is being lived on the planet at this time. And it saddened me that we were not able to make it last better than it did. And I am drawn to share with you, indeed, the circumstances of my death, because there has been a great deal of speculation on exactly how I came to die. And the evidence that was presented was that I died as a result of a mixture of prescription drugs and indeed this is accurate, but what is not well understood was that my death was no accident. There were those who were involved with my death to, in fact, ensure that I died at that time. And the driving force in this was because, as you know, that movie that I had just completed and was about to be released called The Dark Knight was a very dark movie. And in fact, I found it quite unsettling to act in that movie because I could feel the energies behind the intentions of it. But I had committed to it, and so I followed through with it. But I have now come to understand that those who run Hollywood and so many other aspects of life have a very dark agenda. And so it was considered that my demise would assist with the promotion of their dark movie, which, if you have watched that movie, you will know how dark it is. It is in the name and it is in the way the movie travels, you might say. And indeed, there has been at least one press quote of the time saying my death was the most newsworthy item, in terms particularly of how it played into the marketing of that film. And I say to you, my friends, it was no accident. I wish I could say otherwise, but it was not. And so I did not truly die of my own hand, but indeed died at the hands of those who wanted to see the darkness of the movie that we had made be intensified so that its impact upon people could be maximized. Most people today who watch movies and television accept the incredibly strong violence that is such a part of so many of these things. It's almost as if they require this on some level to be successful. And really, you need to understand that humanity is being conditioned through these films and documentaries and television programs to accept such strong violence as a part of life. And indeed, it has been a growing part of life. There is no fostering by these people of the love and compassion and understanding that is the fundamental nature of the human being. And indeed, there is this softening up process that goes on, such that when there is incredible violence in war and so on, which has become really an everyday occurrence on the planet, people have an acceptance of this as if it is somehow normal to for people to treat each other in this manner, and they don't really examine it in any great detail. So there's this dehumanizing process that has been fostered by Hollywood and related interests, that is disconnecting people from their humanity. And I did not truly understand this agenda for much of my career, but I truly began to get a sense of it with The Dark Knight. I began to get a sense of the truly sinister aspects of what was contained in that movie. And it saddened me to realize when I crossed over that this was a very intentional plan to manipulate humanity in this negative way. And my death was used to drive the power of that event. It was, in a way, given credibility as a movie, more power as a movie as a result of my death. And I am not the only actor who has been used in this manner. We are simply a commodity to be dealt with as befits the ones who drive that industry. It is a sad state of affairs, but that is the truth of the matter. So I was drawn to share this picture with you because it is not something perhaps you all understand in terms of just how dark the agenda of Hollywood is and those who run it, and indeed how advanced and comprehensive the progression of this dark agenda is upon the planet. But I do not come simply with this dark and somber message, but rather to share with you a message I know that many others have shared with you through this radio show, and that is the wondrous time you are all living in. I say wondrous time because it is a time when this dark consciousness will be, if not destroyed, certainly left behind by those who wish to move beyond it. And it is this message of hope and indeed from my perspective of certainty, even though it may not seem terribly certain where you are. It is a message of certainty that the time you are in is time long foretold upon the planet of change, of escape from this difficult consciousness, of moving on, of reclaiming the totality of what it means to be human, to reclaim all that humanity was capable of in the time of Atlantis and indeed go beyond this. And I have been able to witness what this means. I have access to those who already reside upon what you might call the new earth, but in fact has existed since before the fall in Atlantis, as there were beings who did not participate in the fall, but in fact transitioned directly to this new earth. So it is simply another level of consciousness, you might say, and it is to this level of consciousness that those who move on, which I would anticipate would include all that who might listen to this program, that I am able to witness those events in your near future. So you are all here for a purpose, to assist with and to participate in this transition that, because of where I am able to witness. So stay the course, my friends. Remain hopeful and know that I will continue to stand by Carolyn in her challenges and be here in her awareness when she allows me to support her, to encourage her, to be a friend to her in this difficult time. And so it is.
Thank you. Thank you, Heath. I appreciate everything that you mentioned. And I would like to invite those who are listening to the radio show right now to call in your questions of Heath if you have any. And while we're waiting for some telephone calls to come in, if people are interested in finding out more, I would like for you, if you can, Heath, to give us some thought, some idea of what you see as the new consciousness. What will Earth be like in this new consciousness?
I find it somewhat ironic that one of the tenets of those promoting a new world order on the planet talk about humanity living in the balance with nature, because indeed that is a hallmark of the new earth, but its implementation is very, very different from the very dark agenda of those driving it on in the current consciousness. So the irony of it has not escaped me. And so what I'm saying by this is that the way life is currently lived on the planet is that its resources are consumed seemingly without hesitation, without thought, without really reflecting on the impact on the planet itself and other creatures which live upon it, including other human beings. This is, to a large degree, how things operate. And indeed, it does not need to be this way. And so how I see things on the new earth is very different from that point of view. Firstly, there is no need for fossil fuels, and I don't need to tell you the impact that that has. There is no mining of the oil from the planet or coal or any such thing to provide energy, because, as you may be aware, there are many mechanisms for bringing energy forth, which harnesses, you might say, the background energy field and simply brings forth the energy that is required. So there is none of this. Secondly, there is no need to mine the planet for materials, because those upon the new earth are able to manifest from the background energy anything that they choose. And indeed, when it is finished with, simply disappear it, you might say, in the same manner. So there is no need for the quarrying, for example, to get stone, or cutting down trees for timber, or any of these things. But rather, there is the ability to simply visualize and manifest. It might be hard for you to imagine this, but of course, one of the impacts of this is that nature is not being harvested, you might say, or destroyed to support the human existence. One thing I will say about this experience is that the time you are in and have been in, and the planet has been in for the last 13,000 years, is what I would describe as being a preoccupation with the temporal, a preoccupation with physical elements of life, of getting the things together to survive, whether it be clothing or food or shelter as the basics, and then moving on from there. But life since the fall in Atlantis has been focused upon these elements. And in more modern times, it has been focused upon gathering the financial resources to what you consider, and certainly what I considered, prospering, to have the trappings of success, you might say. And so life has been focused in this manner. So many people go to work each day, or at least 5 days a week, to earn the money they need to survive. And in the new consciousness, none of this is a requirement, because you can simply bring forth what it is you require from the background energy field. It might be hard for you to imagine at this time, but I paint this picture for you because it is important that you understand this. This period since the fall in Atlantis, as I said, has been focused on the temporal for humanity. And in the time of Atlantis, this was not so. That does not mean that you will not participate in the temporal, quite the opposite. Indeed, in Atlantis, the trappings of life were quite rich and had many options that you don't have today, and I'm able to witness these from where I am viewing things today. So it is not as if you do not have the temporal elements. Of course you do, because that is the dimension in which you formally live, but it is not a situation where you need to spend your time working, to call it that, to generate the money you need to buy the things you need in that temporal domain. All of that will simply disappear. So this perhaps gives you some sense. There are, as I see it, rules about what can be manifested. For example, only those things which are in the interests of the individual and others to whom would be affected by it are allowed to be brought forth. So in a sense, there is this control within the manifesting process so that it cannot be used for the detriment of others. So I hope this helps you to understand a little about how this works. I think the other thing that I would add is that man has had a responsibility for being a guardian, the custodian of the planet, you might say. And this has been sorely neglected in the last few thousand years. And this role will be thoroughly reestablished. Indeed, it exists today with the relatively small number of individuals who currently live in that consciousness. But it will become a hallmark, you might say, of how life is lived, an understanding of the responsibility, an understanding of the gift of life that has been given. So I hope this gives you some sense of how I witness the new earth.
Yes, it does. Heath, I don't know if you can answer this, but can you give us some sense of what the background energy means? I mean, I understand it, and Richard does, but there are probably people listening to this that do not understand what the background energy means. Can you add a little bit to that?
This is not something that I understood whilst I was alive to any extent, and I found it fascinating as I began to understand it once I had crossed over. But the support for what I'm about to say is present in your current science if you look. And that is that all that you are able to see, not just upon the planet, not just in your personal space, but indeed in the entire cosmos, and indeed the energies that you experience, the light, the heat, all of these things are manifested, you might say, from the background energy field. They arise from it. Some of you are aware that the things that look solid in your world really are not solid at all. They only look solid. And, for example, if you look inside an atom, it is mostly made up of empty space. So how could that make something which is solid? And yet, in your experience, it is solid. The chair you are probably sitting on or the desk you are sitting at all look solid, and yet they are not. And humanity has tended to view the things it can see and measure, you might say, in that temporal domain as being essentially all there is. But in fact, it is an extremely small part of all that exists when compared with the energy density in the background energy field. In fact, what you are able to witness is an extremely small part of that total background energy field. And so let me give you a piece of information that might give you some perspective on this, and that is that the background energy held within the volume of a proton, which as you would know is a subatomic particle, the energy contained in that volume of the background energy field is equal to the total known mass and energy in your cosmos.
Amazing.
That is hard to grasp, but it gives you some sense of the level of energy density which exists and which provides the context from which matter and life, in a sense, comes forth from. So, in a sense, bringing things forth from it, once you understand how to do it, is not such a complex thing. In fact, that is what is happening all of the time. You just don't know how to do it yourself. Similarly, bringing forth energy in the form that you need it to provide
electricity, to provide heat and so on, is such a small part of that energy in the background energy field. It is such a trivial thing, in a sense, once you have the mechanisms to harness that energy. So this is really what I wish to convey to you. It is that energy density is so, so huge compared with what you witness, you might say, in that temporal domain.
Exciting ideas, Heath. Thank you. We have a caller on line one who has a question, and this is Nikki from Washington. Welcome, Nikki. What's your question, dear? Nikki?
Hello?
Yes, Nikki. What's your question, dear?
My question is, I'm wondering if Heath is aware of any other celebrities or musicians that have also died because of the dark powers that be, and if any of their aspects are helping behind the scenes to bring in this lighted energy.
Interesting question. Could you hear that, Richard?
Yes, I did.
As you will know, it is not only the film industry which is controlled by those that you call the dark, but for the most part also the music industry. And indeed, the music industry is much more contrived than you might imagine. And it in its own way serves a dark agenda when you analyze the nature of modern music. And there have been a number of well-known musicians who were intentionally eliminated for one reason or another by those of the dark. Of course, perhaps the best known would be John Lennon, but there have also been others, Jimi Hendrix being another. And I would say to you that most people who are drawn to the music industry or the film industry are not of a dark persuasion, you might say. In general, they are creative, expressive, contributing individuals who become ensnared in this spider's web, you might call it, of the dark. And it would not surprise you to know that John Lennon is assisting. And also Michael Jackson, who you've spoken to before, who was also eliminated. And I mentioned Jimi Hendrix. So these are some names. But indeed, there are many that you might know in the music industry and so on who have crossed over for one reason or another, who, on understanding the broader picture, are indeed assisting to the best of their ability to see these changes come forth.
Thank you for your question, Nikki. It was an interesting question. And while we are on this subject, Heath, for instance, individuals who, let's say, were very much into writing music or arranging music, I suspect that they're still doing that on the other side. Is that correct?
Individuals who are drawn to creativity usually continue a form of creativity when they cross over. But what changes is they begin to understand the source of that creativity far better than they did when they were alive. There are some who write music or write literature, or in some cases produce film scripts, who simply are guided on some level in the creation of those pieces of work. Some of the well-known historical classical composers have reported on this phenomenon. Some of the great artists, like
Dali or Picasso talk of this. Some of the composers like Mozart and Beethoven and so on talked of this, but indeed it is quite commonly recognized by them that they are, in a sense, the channel for that creativity, not the source of it. And so, on the other side, they are much more aware of how this works, of how there are these expressions of creativity, you might say, on higher levels that, in a sense, contribute to the creation of such things as music and so on. So the answer to your question is very much yes.
Well, it's an interesting question and an interesting answer. And for people today who are working in these different fields of entertainment and want to, say, work with a soul on the other side for inspiration, how would they go about that?
Firstly, they need to be aware that that's possible. And there are those who are of a directly spiritual inclination who have some awareness of the ability to communicate in the way that you do. And there is a need, you might say, to open such a door. Of course, there are some individuals, just as there are in the pure spiritual experience, where they are made aware of individuals coming forth to communicate with them, to, you might say, send content to them. So some indeed already do it consciously because their predisposition was in place and the beings that were working with them understood this and made themselves known to the individual concerned. So it's something of a two-way street. It does require the individual to be aware of the possibility. And indeed, in some cases, that possibility is, you might say, manifested by the individual on the other side.
Thank you so much, Heath. This might be helpful to some people who wish to work with others on the other side in some creative endeavor. So this was a good question, an answer, and a thread, and hopefully it would be helpful to someone. Well, folks, we're getting very close to the end of our show. This hour goes by so quickly, so if you have a question, please call immediately so we can get an answer for you before we leave. Heath, it seems like we're not getting another question at the moment, and so I would like to thank you and Richard in a very special way for bringing forth this information. We do appreciate it so much.
Looks like Helen from California has turned up.
Oh, yeah, okay. Helen from California on line one, do you have a question?
Yes. I have a question regarding George Lucas. He was inspired to make the movie of Star Wars. And is he in any position to tell us that is he also a cherubim, or is his life mission finished, of this lifetime finished, or he will have a further involvement with this current unfolding?
Let's take these questions a little at a time, Helen, instead of all at one time. You wanted to know if he was a cherubim.
Yes.
Richard, what do you say to that, dear?
I'm hearing no.
Okay.
But
what was your other comment? But
he did come forth to tell what is a galactic story, which is what Star Wars is. Star Wars didn't come from his imagination, but it was, in a sense, channeled. It is a story that is almost in the DNA of everyone on the planet, because everybody understands this great battle between the light and the dark that has been going on
right throughout all of creation. And indeed, it has included those of the dark posturing as being of the light, as we saw in Star Wars series. So it is no accident that George brought that forth, and indeed it was part of his intention in this life to bring that story forth in all its detail. And it has resonated with the public so powerfully because people understand on a level that this story is a real story. It's a real, it's an expression of what in truth has been happening across the cosmos for a long, long, long time.
Thank you. Helen, give us another part of your question.
Will he have any further involvement with the current unfolding? Bring the new consciousness.
He has fulfilled his mission with the work that he has undertaken. I am not saying that he will not progress in onto the new consciousness, because if he stays, which I expect he will, then he will indeed progress to the new consciousness. But he does not have a formal role beyond that which he has already performed.
Mm. So, Helen, thank you for your questions. We appreciate them. And, Richard, you bring forth the answers from Heath. And, again, we want to thank you and Heath in a very special way for being here tonight and bringing this information forth. And while we're talking about this information, Richard, those who might want to work with others in the manner in which you are working with Heath, where could they go and get more information about this?
They can go to rightbrainmagic.com, and you'll see there the details of how we go about this. There are examples there of people doing this work and their reactions and so on.
And Richard teaches this, and he's very good at it too.
Thank you.
I'd say he was a master at it.
That's because I had a good teacher.
Oh, anyone I know?
So I think the other thing I would just like to take the opportunity to mention is that Carolyn is now back doing the Soul Origin and History readings, which really are quite extraordinary readings. And after her fall back in August, she really wasn't in a place to do these for quite a long time. But she's now completed two of these in the last couple of weeks, in the last few weeks, and is beginning work on another one now as I speak to you about it. So if you are drawn to that, if you are not familiar with it, go to souloriginandhistory.com. You will find, again, examples of those readings that she has brought forth and people's reactions to them. And if you are drawn to it, you may wish to take the opportunity to order one of those readings. They're quite extraordinary readings, truly.
Thank
quite
you.
A bit of work in putting
them
together.
It is a lot of work bringing that forth, too.
Indeed.
There's a lot of steps to it to get all of that information, because the information does cover a vast circle, so to speak. Things such as your monads, activity, the area in which your monad works, and the different fingers of consciousness that your monad has sent to Earth to work on fulfilling its objective. So there are questions and answers that you really won't find anywhere else, I would say.
I would say.
Well, Richard, we're getting very close to the end.
Yes.
And you might want to talk a little bit about the DVDs that we have on our knight, so to speak.
On the Knights Templar, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, well, it's I have been threatening for a little while now, but I hope to put out an email in the next couple of days sharing some of the really quite extraordinary feedback that we've had from that series. It's quite amazing, really, the reactions that some people have had. And the power, you might say, in that material that some people have experienced. Again, in this kind of area, you know, the experience that people have of this kind of material is a very personal thing. What they experience is not necessarily what you would experience in working with it, but what it does convey is that the material does carry a power, you might say, that is able to open up these understandings and these experiences for the people that are working with the material. So I hope to get that email out perhaps tomorrow, and I think you'll be quite amazed, as I was, by some of the feedback that that I've received.
Yes, and there's a lot of information in it about the Gothic cathedrals, which will surprise you because it's not information that's generally held by the public.
Indeed, it's not. No, it's been well and truly hidden.
Indeed. Well, Richard, do you have any last-minute things you wish to touch on before we leave?
I don't think so, Carolyn. I think we're done for the night. And so I thank you for your contribution, the work that you do to glue this all together and make it work. I thank you for that.
And thank you, Richard. Without your work, we couldn't have a show tonight. And Heath also. We'd like to thank him. Yes. Yeah. And those at BBS that support us, we would like to give a special thank you to them too. So until next week, when we are here again to work with all of you and to listen to what you might have to say. And if you have some suggestions as to some guests you might wish to for us to bring on our show, send an email to Richard and give us your suggestion.
Indeed. So good night, Carolyn. Thank you.
Good night, Richard, and good night all until next week.